netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for taking the time to download our podcast today. I'm John Montgomery. Our guest is Chris Bond of ThinkBox Software. They're the makers of Krakatoa and Deadline. Now, Krakatoa is a volumetric particle toolkit, and Deadline is network rendering software that supports a wide variety of applications and runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux workstations. You may actually recognize those two product names as being part of Phrenic Films or Phrenic Film Software, or more recently, since 2007, of Prime Focus Software, once they acquired Frantic Films in 2007. But now the software is in an outside company being developed by ThinkBox Software with the original R&D team, as well as Chris Bond. And I think that's really important to point out, because I kind of think they were maybe a bit ahead of the curve, or at least consistent with the curve, of developing in-house software and then marketing it to other post-production houses. I mean, they were basically developed these software applications to fit their needs at Phrenic Films, effectively get work done, get VFX work done, and then decide to market it to a wider audience in general. I mean, you see that happening with, of course, Nuke and things like Mari and things like that. Something that you see that kind of that production-proven, battle-tested software, so to speak, finding really significant adoption outside the companies where it grew up. So what we thought we'd do is catch up with Chris and see what's happening. This is Chris Bond of ThinkBox speaking with Mike Seymour.
So I wanted to talk to you about Krakatoa because time and time again, I keep on doing interviews with people and Krakatoa comes up in two areas, just basic particle rendering and also just for adding realism to other things. And I was just figuring that we might talk to you directly, and it's been a while.
Yeah, sure. How are you doing?
Good. So just bring us up to date as to where Krakatoa is at and what the latest version is and stuff.
Essentially, Krakatoa is a high-volume particle renderer. That's how it started off. We were using it in production at Frantic and Prime for visual effects projects, I think starting back at a movie called Stay that we did. And it was a very valuable tool, and of course people had interest in it, and so this is how Deadline started as well. So we put it out to market and, you know, beta tested through some friends, facilities, people that signed up. And it got more and more interest. So, you know, version one of Krakatoa came out. And essentially, you know, that allowed you to render a large quantity of particles. So on Superman, you know, we were rendering billions of particles. And literally, I think, per frame for some sequences, or nearly a billion, with motion blur, depth of field, and so forth. So, you know, it was allowed us to create these huge volume of particles. And what we wanted to be able to do with them after that, of course, is modify them and affect them a lot of ways. Because, you know, creating particles, sort of automating the creation of particles is one thing. But once you chunk out these giant, you know, database of particles, you don't want to have to – every time a client wants to do something, you don't want to have to modify it. So, you know, we're at version 1.6. And I can't, you know, go through all the different things that have changed through the releases. But essentially – what the current version lets you do, it lets you modify the particles after the fact while using a number of modifiers. So, for example, you can export a whole bunch of the particles, slice and dice, remove specific particles. There's a whole interface we call Magma, which is a node-based interface, which lets you do all sorts of operations to the particles. So you can, you know, add more noise to them, or remove high-frequency particles or low-frequency particles, or thin out the herd, or take out a volume. And Bobo has done a whole number of – Bobo Petrov is a, you know, a person who used to work with me when I was employed at Prime and at Phrenic. And he's a very strong user of the tool and someone that, you know, has helped us write the manuals and so forth for the tool set for Krakatoa. And so he's created all sorts of fantastic YouTube demos where he does like non-photorealistic rendering using Magma and Krakatoa to take, you know, 3D volumes of objects and then shade them differently and so forth. So what now we have now is Krakatoa is more than just a particle renderer. It's kind of like this particle toolkit to modify and affect particles. And so the upcoming versions are going to continue in that way. You know, obviously it'll be improving the speed and some features and some bugs and so forth. But the main thing we're going to address, I hope, is the expansion on what Krakatoa can do for a visual effects production. So there's some neat stuff. I think there's going to be some really, you know, interesting and different surprises into what extent you can use particles nowadays. But, you know, my bottom line is I feel like we can use particles in ways that maybe traditional renderers have been relied on for. And you can use them, you know, so not just for smoke and fire, but for physical objects.
Well, let's walk our way through just some of the basic concepts so that people can sort of place
sure.
How this is all working. So let's say I'm doing a normal fluid sim or a fire sim. There are stages to that, right? Like obviously the first stage would be a simulation stage, which depending on which version of the Navier-Stokes equations type approach I take, I'm going to use particles for. Let's say I'm using an approach like Lagrangian that is a particle based in its entirety. At some point, I'm going to take those particle sims. I'll be happy with them. I'll polygonize them, and then I'm going to render them. Now,
right.
Where does Krakatoa fit into that? Does Krakatoa do the simulation, the polygonization, the rendering? Because there's sort of like two sides to this, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, currently it doesn't actually generate the particles per se. It hooks into other things that generate the particles. So particle flow or thinking particles, or Max's, you know, built-in particle system, and it lets you use those and modify them and manipulate them after the fact. So, you know, I'll give you a really simple example is, you know, inside Max, you might be able to simulate, you know, and I don't want to, you know, minimize it, but say 100,000
sure.
particles, right? And you can,
yep.
you can work with that pretty quickly and get the turbulence values the way you want and so forth. But when you render 100,000 particles, it doesn't look like a lot. So people, you know, tended to make each particle really expansive. You know, they would use volumetric rendering. So they'd make each particle like a cotton ball. So it covered 10 pixels or 50 pixels to get the volume.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know in real life, dust, you know, isn't the size of cotton balls or large spheres. Dust is, you know, billions and billions of smaller, you know, moat-sized pieces of dust that build up to create this volume. And so the idea of Krakatoa is that we want to be able to take a simulation and simulate something in real life by creating a large volume of particles. So Krakatoa will automate, you know, the seed value and the multiplication of your simulation in a variety of ways so that you can get millions of particles simulated versus, you know, say just 100,000. And so that way you get what I used to call it back in the day, and I don't really think it's called this in the literature at this point, was the idea is that we partition it, but we create all these sub-pixel particles, which in rendering they build up so that you get this density and volume and something that looks far more like a true simulation of something. So even though, you know, without Krakatoa, you could simulate the best smoke in the world in terms of its movement, but it's the light quality and the way it looks isn't going to look very accurate because generally it'll be large cotton balls or something, as I call it. So that's the number one thing it does. And then beyond that, it's got a lot of support for how those individual particles are rendered, you know, from being sort of additives. It gives you those ethereal magic type effects or you know, things like Dr. Bailey Spore. You know,
yep.
We worked with Dr. Bailey on Superman. He did all those sort of chaos math calculations to create really ethereal effects, which I see, you know, consistently in comic books nowadays. And we've added, you know, self-shadowing for each particle piece, scattering, emission, absorption, all those standard things to let you, you know, create volumetrics of smoke. And beyond that, you know, we're working on a number of things, but, you know, and forgive me if I know if I'm speaking out of turn about what's actually in the release. But, for example, we were able to, you know, do something with reflection maps so that particles actually have a metallic look to them.
Now, could I use Krakatoa, for example? Do I have to use Krakatoa just as particles? Can I If I want to do any polygonalization of the sims, that's not in Krakatoa, I presume, or is it?
No. That's where Krakatoa. Yeah, definitely. Like so it's not just rendering, but it's manipulation of the simulation after the fact, so that you can modify a lot of different things. So specifically, and I can give you some examples here. You can cull out stuff. If I said it earlier, either with geometry or other shapes, or by behavior. So you can, if there's, there's always those stray particles in any simulation you kind of don't like, and rather than having to paint them out or delete them by hand, you can cull those through a variety of methods, either by having geometry encapsulate them, or you could do them by the speed or color or whatever you want. Then you can also modify them with any sort of max deformation modifier. So, my favorites are the space warps and max, that you can use to bend or warp or ripple geometry. You can apply that to the particles after the simulations happen. So if you create a really great simulation, but it needs to bend around a corner, you can just bend that whole simulation and it'll have the characteristics of the original sim, but now curve around a corner, do what you want. So one of the ways that can be used is you can create a limited number of simulations for something like smoke or fire or explosive effects or magical trails, or even just solid things or geometry that aren't manifested as small, dense particles, and then manipulate them after the fact. So you can reuse those libraries of simulations if you want to. And that becomes really powerful. Say, for example, you do a waterfall, but you have a scene with hundreds of waterfalls and you want to place them, manipulate them. You could use the same simulation data for all of those waterfalls in a shot. So you're not having to simulate a number of disparate things that are different shape. You can also retime the simulations so that the simulations happen faster, slower, interpolate and so forth.
Which of course feeds directly into the motion blur.
Right, exactly, and you can modify the motion blur and the segments and so forth. I mean, the length of time, the shutter size. The whole idea is that you can simulate something, spend less time simulating and more time manipulating that simulation to get into your scene.
Now, as I said before, there are really two sides to it, because the other side to it is that this doesn't have to be data that's coming to you from a simulation. For example, there's nothing stopping me bringing in point cloud information that might be gathered on set, or I could use LiDAR data and then bring that into a form that Krakatoa would be able to produce to render, correct?
Yeah, that's totally correct. And you can generate the data from any source. So there's a Radiohead music video.
That Ben Grossman did?
Yeah, there's a Radiohead music video that's all LiDAR data.
Yeah.
And scan data. So that sort of thing can be done definitely with Krakatoa, and you can import that. You can import Krakatoa point data in a number of different ways. We have a PRT format, and we support next limits, the real flow bin format, and we also support ASCII comma separated format so that a TD could, for example, in their application, export the particles however they want. So you could do a number of different things. And the other thing I want to say is it's not just about particles. I mean, one of the great tricks that we have with this is that we can make, we can render geometry. So you can take, we have a demo of this mini.
Mm-hmm.
And the mini is a surfaced object inside Max. And we generate a particle mesh that is the mini and then reproject the mini texture and renders on top of that through a camera projection. And so it looks like a solid mini, but now it's particles and you can do whatever you want with it. So you can have it transition, in the case we have it sort of blow away, but you can have an object do whatever you want. You can use it as a morphing effect to transition between one CG character to another. You could use it for, a flocking effect for like bees to a distant shot of bees to fly around that reform and connect into a spaceship or whatever the client requires. So it's pretty much, once an object is particles, you can do pretty much whatever you want with it. You cut it in half, make it explode, fly it apart, put it back together, So I think there's a lot of uses for this that haven't been seen. And I think that our new versions will have some advances in it that will, push the envelope and how particles are viewed in terms of 3D. I have to say, I'm it was like 4 or 5 years ago when this stuff was really working. I thought to myself, you know, maybe particle rendering can be as important to production as, you know, ray tracing is versus using like a scanline arrays renderer. You know, there's an advantage mm-hmm. to different types of renders for different problems. In my experience, there's times when you want to ray trace things and times when you want to use a, you know, ray style renderer or a scanline renderer for different purposes, because there's cases where you have to combine both for speed or the quality of the render or whatever. You know, trying to force all of your renders through one tool set can get you into trouble in terms of, you know, CPU time or memory or whatever resources you have. So there's cases where you can break each renderer, I think. And, you know, so most of the facilities I know that are successful combine, you know, different renderers for different problems and combine them in comp or combine them at render time. And I think that Krakatoa is a new way at looking at specific problems, and rather than trying to force those problems through, you know, a ray style renderer or a ray tracer, you can take Krakatoa to solve those problems. And I believe it as a toolkit, as a rendering toolkit, it will open the doors and eyes to more to successfully solving challenges with other renderers right now. And I think that's going to come forward in the future. And then in addition, the manipulation of the particles becomes very important. And this is where, you know, as a visual effects supervisor and former owner of a facility, I think that you want the flexibility to reuse your data as much as possible. When a client says, I need this shot to do this differently, you don't have to go all the way back to your simulation and spend hours resimulating if you can just take your existing simulation and modify it. And that's where one of the big benefits of Krakatoa comes into play, post-manipulation.
Now, obviously, a lot of systems aren't well set up for rendering vast amounts of particles, but I think it's easy to get somewhat transfixed on the vast, you know, numbers, because that's a good sort of headline, you know, the millions, the billions of particles. But actually, it's the quality of the rendering of them that I think Krakatoa stands out in. And I'm going to just focus on one area of that, and that's the thing that you touched on briefly, which is self-shadowing, and I guess a related area, which is the idea of you having the workflow to have OpenEXR deep opacity mats. Can you talk about that? Because I think, as I say, it's easy just to say, oh, I can do lots of particles, but without the self-shadowing, without the ability to work well in a pipeline in terms of things like deep opacity maps, then you're not going to get the same production value at the other end.
Yeah, well, you know, it all came from using it in production, right? I mean, you know, we're definitely in an environment where, because we work on film, we would have to have, you know, high dynamic range source images. And, you know, when you're motion blurring something, you want the object to dim like it normally would and the highlights to be visible. So those are all very important things that were built into this, you know, really from the beginning in terms of how it worked. Like, I think one of the first features we had internally was depth of field and motion blur, because you can't have a render and film and broadcast and without those things. So that was always very important to us. And then, of course, we have to be able to combine it with scene data. So bringing in geometry so that we can obscure or matte things in the scene is obviously clearly key. And then being able to, you know, match specific cameras. I mean, there's a bunch of work behind the scene so that, you know, we've solved the pipeline between using like a non-max camera, like a V-Ray camera or something within it. And I was saying there are perfect solutions for these. As an aside, I think that, you know, cameras is one area of research for everyone. At the same time, you know, you're able to use opacity maps, or what we call like shadow attenuation maps, to be able to project shadows from the particles onto your scene geometry so that you can apply that at comp time, so it looks like the particles are interacting with your assets. So you can take out your sort of pieces that you need so that in composite world, it all works together really fluidly as if the particles were rendered in your renderer of choice. So that flexibility, I think, is really important to the user, and we're looking to expand on those things. I mean, what I want is I want more and more facilities to, you know, tell me the things that they need within Krakatoa, what they need in real-world production, so that we can continue to scale the tool. and keep doing more and more amazing things with it. I really get, you know, off on seeing all the really cool animations and sequences and uses of Krakatoa.
And so in addition to that stuff about projecting shadow over geometry and stuff, it's kind of walks us into another area, which is, of course, Krakatoa needs to be a very good kind of, I don't know, visual effects citizen, because it's very much sitting in a pipeline, in a workflow. Like, it needs to work very well with things like FumeFX. It needs to work well with the you know, base 3D programmers, and also, of course, you know, dovetail into compositing and stuff. I mean, you guys really are very workflow focused.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the whole idea is that, you know, this tool is got a lot of depth to it. It's easy enough to get in there and start rendering some really cool images and particles. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, like, I swear, like 12 and 14 year olds are using educational versions for. I hope educational versions for. And I see them on YouTube. You know, there's a lot of great stuff that's being done. But at the same time, you know, you can really get in there with Magma and create some really complex post manipulation of the particles that do some amazing stuff. So, I mean, I've seen some amazing creations using, you know, one simulation for a lot of different purposes, and reusing that. And I can't sort of state that over enough, because in terms of a time saver, and this is what I think everybody in the industry needs nowadays, is they need to be able to be more effective at what they're doing and give people results that are really satisfying for the director or, you know, your visual effects supervisor, with less iterations. And so when you can modify particles that you've cached out and manipulate them in a variety of ways, use them over and over again, it's really a big, big thing. But yeah, like the new version, you know, it has improved a lot of performance. One of the things that I'm looking at is partnering with like the Fusion.io guys to get, you know, real samples of what happens when we take some of those RAM cards, we use them with Krakatoa for particles, what kind of speed, because right now, like, the rendering limitation isn't really a function of, you know, it's so fast. It's not really a function of the calculation time. It's a function of the I/O. So if you have a small data set, I mean, you can almost play back this stuff in real time. It's just when you have, you know, hundreds of gigabytes of particle data or terabytes of particle data, and what do you do with that, you know? So when you have to load that off the drive and it takes a specific amount of time. So, you know, what I'm looking at in the future is how we can get that data set smaller, how we can get that data set quicker to the processor so that you can work with it even faster and it's more iterative.
So now, for people that are wondering, let's just get to the pointy end for a second. So the website to go to for Krakatoa, if you've known it back in the day, it's changed a little bit. It's now Thinkbox. So what's the URL?
It's www.thinkboxsoftware.com. And if you want to go directly to the Krakatoa page, it's /Krakatoa.
Okay, so how accessible is it for somebody to get into playing with Krakatoa? Let's say they've done some particle stuff, or they've even got some fluid sim stuff happening. They want to actually take it to the next level and certainly give it the kind of production value that I think Krakatoa really provides. And how accessible is it to actually purchase?
Well, before you purchase it, you can actually try an eval. You can go to our website at thinkboxsoftware.com downloads, and you can download the Krakatoa build from there. The build basically runs. There's some minor issues. For example, it's watermarked. The images are watermarked. Network rendering will not work. And there's some particle flow operators that will be disabled. But essentially, the tool is as is, so that you can test it and work with it and see exactly how it works. And if you want a non-watermarked one, you know, to evaluate for some reason, you can contact our sales department at sales@thinkboxsoftware.com. We can give you the tool. In terms of pricing, we kind of have a range of pricing. Fundamentally, we have a workstation license and a rendering license, but we have something called a standard bundle as a workstation and two rendering licenses, and that comes to about $1,245 with support, US dollars, which I think is probably a good deal for a lot of people outside of the US right now. And the pro bundle is a little more money, but it's two workstation and 10 rendering licenses, and that's $3,745. With 1 year support. Now, the support we have, I think we have fantastic support. You're getting access to the developers. And in the support contract for a year, you get all upgrades and updates. And if you look at the release updates between, you know, even 1.5 and 1.6, we've been adding new features. I mean, we're not just, you know, waiting a year for a new version as people require things. We're, you know, we've got a lot of stuff that we want to do. And I've always liked pushing out software as frequently as I can and not kind of having this mentality of every 18 months or 1 year that you have a big release and charge people a lot of money for an upgrade. So we try to keep support in there so that we can defray our support costs. So I think those bundles are the best deal, because if you buy the stuff individually, it gets a little more pricey.
So just before we go, you have mentioned deadline, and we haven't just explained what that is. So without going into a lot of detail, you should just flag what it is, because it's the other major product from ThinkBox.
Yeah, Deadline is a network management toolkit. It basically handles all of your rendering across all of your environments. So the idea is, you know, when I started off doing rendering, I had a big issue that my compositing application and my 3D application didn't render on the same render farm, and I had to turn machines on or off manually and all sorts of problems. So we created a tool called Deadline, which supports, I think we support over 40 different rendering applications, you know, from After Effects all the way to Vue and Max and V-Ray and Maya and Softimage and Houdini and everything in between, including rendered, you know, rib generation and so forth. And it also supports Windows, Linux, and Mac OS. And I've seen, you know, environments where people have Lightwave on Linux, or sorry, Mac and Windows, and they have like a Linux server, and they're rendering happily along on all these different pieces and combining the renders at render time. So, you know, I obviously don't know if every render is going to render exactly the same or cross-platform, but we've had a lot of luck and experience in cross-platform environments. So that's basically what it is. I mean, it's got a lot of features and advancements beyond that, but the idea is that you can render, you know, from your application you want to render, share the render farm from people, and then, you know, there's advanced features like when this render completes, start this comp, and, you know, so forth, so that you can tie, you can chain events together so that you can, you know, have an entire production pipeline keyed off of one element being rendered or something if you really want to. But yeah, it's pretty bulletproof. I mean, you know, as long as your server is up and running, the machine will continue to render, because there isn't like a central application that runs the rendering. It's all file based. So as long as your file server is functioning and still in production and working, there's nothing really that can go wrong. So it's
one thing about Deadline that caught my eye was the fact that it actually has energy consumption monitoring, because I know that the farms get really expensive with power and especially air conditioning, and the idea that it would manage shutting down idle machines, because obviously if you're setting up a render over the weekend, if it all gets solved in the first morning, you really want to have the farm not chugging out and being air conditioned for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, it can get expensive, and that's one of the reasons we actually put that in there before all the energy stuff was all the buzz, because, you know, it was one of those things, the wake on land stuff, you know, it was all designed to, you know, be able to turn off the machines and just save that $175 a day or whatever your farm costs, you know. The other point is, we have some, because of the environment it came out of, we have a lot of remote submission tools. So you can, you know, create a scene in one city and then render it in another one. And so that's stuff that's pretty interesting in Deadline.
Yeah, well, I think all that stuff's great. Well, look, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, it was great to catch up on what's been happening at ThinkBox Software. It's good to see those products being developed. I think they've got a really nice, strong place in the industry, and I think they're well-positioned to continue developing them moving forward. It's great that the original R&D team was involved still with the product. Got a lot of great content scheduled to come up at FX Guide. Got a great FX Guide TV app with Gareth Edwards. Got, of course, coverage of the recent Harry Potter release. They had just some insane box office numbers over the weekend. We'll have a podcast and written article about that coming up here in the coming weeks. As I mentioned last week, if you have any comments or suggestions about the podcast, drop us a line at podcast@fxguide.com. But until next time, for my partners Mike Seymour and Jeff Huser, thanks for listening.
Please
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.